So I wanted to clarify and elaborate a bit on one of the points raised last night, which is the spectrum of eye consciousness, and to give a more complete sense of the different layers of the eye that one must go through in order to reach the absolute self. Because it's important that you recognize where you are in the spectrum in order to know if there is something more. Because it's very easy to settle for certain intermediary levels that are so much more peaceful than the one you started at that you stop the journey halfway, you know. And if you do that, then you're going to be brought back into the ego consciousness. And so if you want liberation from that, the journey through the entire spectrum must be complete. And so I was meditating a bit today on how best to conceptualize and map that spectrum more completely than was done in the traditional wisdom schools. Because I think that those maps were accurate for the consciousness at the time, which was in a much more sattvic state than the mind is at the end of Kali Yuga. And so the salmon has more rapids to have to leap up beyond in order to get to the spawning ground where the new world can be born out of that consciousness. So I'm going to write some on the whiteboard so that it's more easy to refer to it. And I even made a few notes. So, the initial I is the I that is the one self from which the multiplicity emanates. What must be understood is that there is only one I. Only that one is real. The rest are all reflections, emanations, expressions, archetypal permutations. But it's all one I. every one of us, every being in the universe, shares the same ultimate I. When you have removed all the intermediary thought forms, the I that you are is the Supreme Self, is God, is Shiva, is Brahman, is Allah. There is no other I. When that sinks in, that's when the journey of return to the self is able to be actualized. But you have to be able to grok that as a truth. You have to be able to even begin by imagining that all share the same ultimate perceiver, ultimate intelligence that is manifesting as infinity. But it's the zero point, which is the infinitesimal and the infinite simultaneously. So this is the ultimate state that everyone will return to, but most will go there after the death of the body and will not know it while the body is alive, because they have been identified with thought forms, not with the thinker, the creator of those thought forms. And so long as you have not freed yourself from the bondage of identification with a thought form, and the body is a thought form, everything here is a thought form. It's made out of light and intelligence, but it is all from the thought of the oneself. So once there is a recognition that you are liberating yourself from the belief that you are only a reflection, a shadow, an ultimate point of, we could say, self-alienation, because there is so much distance psychologically and in terms of your belief system from that ultimate reality. But you are already that, and that is active, awake, and present within you at every moment. It's not just that it will happen at the end. So the second eye is the eye of divine wisdom and of the will of God and of the adoration of God, adoration that is internal to God consciousness, not an intersubjective relation, but a relation of unity. And from that, that supreme love emanates the beauty of that love in the form of the quantum and qualium waveforms that fill the space that is emanated, which is Brahman, right? As the God field that then contains within it congealed the quantum unified field, and within that the waveforms that at other levels of the eye will collapse into apparent physical forms until the entire hologram is filled out and developed as an entire unified theodrama. But the wisdom of that emanates from the absolute I and becomes capable of being translated into thought. And this is... This is where I would locate the Tao, the Bodha, which is the Buddha mind, and the goddess Shakti. Below that is the eye of luminous clarity. And it's a clarity that is oriented toward a reality that is perceivable. It's a clarity of mind that is open to becoming a perceiver, that is the transition between nirvana and samsara. It is a capacity now to enter into time and space, into an unfolding process. And it has that ability of freedom to perceive what really is. But it is able to perceive forms that will arise in its consciousness that will reflect its symbolic meanings, its symbolic significance to itself. Room, so I'm going to write smaller here. The fourth is one that I think is often left out, which is the eye of sense. And what do I mean by sense? It's a generalized sense of reality. The reason why the world seems to make sense to people, maybe it no longer does, but in general, people take for granted that they are born into a world, you know, a world where people are born and die, where everything is temporary, where there is gravity, where there are stars, where there are laws of nature, where you can breathe the atmosphere and, you know, all these kinds of almost impossible, miraculous aspects of the phenomenal plane, the infinite beauty of all the forms of nature, the orchid with its symbiosis with the wasps and the bees, that, and all the flowers pollinated by creatures of other species, all of those interacting aspects of the ecosystem that show it is a system, it's a single intelligence of mutual benefit that supports the enhancement of life. And that whole understanding of the world making sense to you. Imagine being born as a baby, and suddenly you're in a new world in a body that is almost totally helpless, and yet you're in a state of wonderment about it, not a state of paranoia. You don't see that in babies, at least not if the mother is there loving it. And it knows automatically, you know, to trust the mother, to breastfeed, to let her bathe and change and do everything for the baby. There's a naturalness to it that isn't coming from the baby's thinking out. Okay, I was just born, and that person's a mother. That's dad, and that's, you know, there. It doesn't happen that way. It's a knowledge that is imminent and is inherent. But imagine if you tomorrow woke up and found yourself in the body of a baby, a strange baby with a strange mother, and your world that you remembered from the day before was gone. Would you be in a state of wonderment or of paranoia? And saying, what is going on? I must be dreaming. This is a nightmare. So the baby doesn't have that, even though it did just come from another life to be reborn, at least in most cases. So the natural wonder that comes as the process unfolds in the way that is meant to, in accord with the will of God, is one that is not questioned because of the eye of sense. And that eye creates an event horizon that separates the world of sense from the world that is beyond sense, the nirvanic world of the higher levels of the eye. And now we enter into the eye levels that will become phenomenalized. They will begin to be identified with material vehicles. But before that, we get the eye of drive. The baby, even before it's born, the fetus, the soul that comes in to a new life, comes in with a particular drive. It has received a mission, marching orders. It has received its instructions from on high. And it comes in with a power to actualize, even though it will forget and may resist all of that consciously, but it will be pushed, regardless of whether it wants to or not, into the development of that unfoldment of its mission, its blossoming, in the same way that a flower is. It has the genetic instructions to blossom in a certain way. We have it, not genetically, but we have it metaphysically. We are given that as part of the archetypal instructions to manifest a particular kind of being. And a drive is not the same as desire, which is comes only with thought. But this is something instinctive, and it's something that is we could call an unknown known. We don't know where we are driven, or even that we are driven. But some are driven by the upper death drive. We can see that they're very much caught up in wanting to know the truth, wanting to grow spiritually. Others are caught in the lower death drive and just want to space out and lose consciousness and die because of their internal agony. Which drive is the one that you are connected with, that is moving you? But at the level of the eye of drive, there is no longer free will to change the drive. It is part of the accelerating velocity of becoming that begins to actualize one's life in the world. Okay, and then the eye of desire, and desire and thought are one. They're two sides of the same coin. Without thought, there would be no desire. Thought and desire move the mind to create a particular kind of life. But those thoughts and desires and projections, because there will already be a projection of what is both valuable and what is one's shadow into the world. The world will be made up of this chiaroscuro panorama of that which is desired and that which is to be avoided. And these values then that will have come from the higher levels will simply manifest as situations and certain kinds of relationship and then be actualized as karma. So then then we have the what we called last night the eye of the statement. This is the being that actually speaks. And much of what is spoken is not spoken from a conscious level, but from subconscious desires and from superconscious drives and from higher levels of the eye. Every being is constituted with a different level of access to the higher gradations of eye consciousness. And some are driven to develop further into the core of the self, and others are not permitted to access the higher levels. It's not part of their desire system. They can't want it. If they wanted it, they could have it, but they won't want it. That curiosity will not arise in their minds because the qualium wave function is collapsed in a certain way that it doesn't become something that is ever considered to be valuable or real or possible. And so one lives simply at that superficial behavioral level where one is a worldly being with a kind of a cynical attitude that this is all there is. There is no depth dimension, no creator who is dreaming us all, no understanding of the metaphysical dimensions that support and sustain the world of becoming. And that are actually present in the world of becoming, in the sense that they're not somewhere else. All the levels and gradations of I are here now at this moment, and all are active, all are awake and present. But if you're located and identified with one of these lower levels of I consciousness, you won't be aware. You may know about higher ones because you came to a satsang and heard about it, but you won't have access to the real, to the spiritual knowledge. You'll have the intellectual knowledge, but it won't sink in, and it won't create a drive to attain that ultimate self. But if that is there, it means that that purification of the consciousness has already been attained sufficient that the upper death drive, meaning the death of the ego, which doesn't really die, it's simply one loses interest in the body, the world of bodies and the world of petty concerns of an ego, and one's concerns are about the eternal and the redemptive. So as one meditates and one is able to overcome the gravity of the, let's say, the lower four, then one reaches luminous clarity. And in that clarity, one can perceive all of this as it really is, and for the fiction that it is. And one will have clarity also about the source. And the consciousness from that point will naturally and easily rise to its own origin again and realize the one self that is animating us all. And there will no longer be any karma and no longer any bondage of a psychological nature, because the psychological apparatus doesn't exist at those higher levels of your I. So speaking of the eye of sense, how many of you felt this made sense to you? Okay, that's good. And I think it's important to to understand that, particularly as you get to the eye of sense, because the fear that people have that stops them from going beyond that level is a fear of madness, because suddenly it doesn't make sense anymore. Your whole world, you realize, has never made any sense. And you can't make sense of what is happening to you at that point. Sense is no longer the logic that operates to determine your sense of well-being or of orientation to the real. Now the compass points directly to the source of the light and of infinite consciousness that has every possible permutation of sense and nonsense within its consciousness. And there's a non-duality of sense and nonsense, because creativity turns nonsense into beauty, into brilliance. But you have to be willing to go beyond your own common sense, thinking outside of the box, but all the boxes, in order to reach the real. So there can't be any limitations or paradigms or contexts that limit the creative imagination of your intelligence. And that's when you reach the infinite level of the self that creates worlds. I think I'll leave it there and open the floor if people have any questions about this or about anything else that you want to ask. I think if you get this and are able to understand the logic of how you reach this through an increasing level of presence, silence, and stillness of mental agitation. That's how you penetrate through these intermediary levels, and they are no longer obstructions to you. But there has to be that level of understanding so that there's no fear of going beyond sense and going beyond name and form, going beyond the world, beyond the holographic form in which the ego mind is embedded, and to traverse through those levels of consciousness in which you will perceive only divine light, because that's all that really is here. That's all this is. Light as the carrier wave of divine intelligence. And one consciousness, one eye, dreaming all of it, and you are that eye. And because you are that eye, you are already liberated from the ego if you can actualize the drive for liberation. That's all. That's all that's required. But to do that, to be liberated from your attachments, that's the question. If you realize that reaching the absolute self has infinite value, but holding on to whatever you think you have in this world where everything is temporary has almost no value, then it will be easy to activate that drive. But if you are clinging to your attachments at the ego level, then the consciousness simply will not rise. You put in ballast, like the divers that put weights on their belt to sink into the ocean. You won't be able to float to the top. So removal of ballast, removal of baggage, that's all that this is about. Okay. I'll stop here, and if there's anyone who wishes, please go to the mic. Urvashi.
Thank you. That was really helpful teaching. I just had a question about the eye of drive. You said it's... I'm just wondering what determines it, because you said it's the soul has a mission and it's predetermined and it's an unknown known and there's no free will to change the drive. But then you just said...
Not from the lower levels. That's right. Not from the levels that then activate the drive, but that drive is given to you before this birth, in your as a result of both karma and the teleology, the destiny of your particular soul. And that drive is determined by your love of God.
Okay.
The more love of God, the more there is the upper drive.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's more love for money than for God, more love for worldly sensory enjoyments than for God, then it will be the lower drive. So it will be determined by the quality of the soul and its whole trajectory, its whole sutratma. Right? But one thing I want to add to make this very clear, regardless of what the drive is of the I at that level, you already are the absolute I. And so it doesn't matter the drive of your particular character that you're playing, as long as you disidentify from that character, then you are not governed by its drive. It's not the drive of the real self. It's the drive only of those reflections at the lower level. And so your real self can always change the nature of the drive of the character, but you can be free of the character even if it is trapped in the lower death drive. You know, it can be, you know, an alcoholic about to die from overdoses, and then suddenly its upper death drive will cause it to meet someone from a 12-step program, and it'll get sober, and life will change miraculously. Things like that happen. Amazing grace, right? So the shift of the drive happens when there is an opening to those higher levels, which will often come when one faces death and one realizes one hasn't fulfilled the real mission, and then that will activate. Okay. Bruce?
A question from Annalise. Is there free will on the higher levels of the I?
Oh, yes. The absolute self is total freedom, and the I of wisdom, nearly that. Its only baggage is its wisdom itself, which produces a kind of responsibility to emanate a beautiful world. That would be the only limitation, all the way through to the luminous clarity. There is freedom. It's only once you enter the eye of sense that the world starts to become fixed as being of a certain way and with only certain possibilities. But before that, all is free. Proud Mary. Isn't that a song? Can we play that?
So I'm wondering about this capacity to enter into time and space, and maybe how that relates to these new quantum physics guys who are saying that they realize that time and space is just a construct of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the sense. That's the level of the eye of sense. It perceives things through that format of space and time. And then things have linear succession. Now there's cause and effect. There's all of the aspects of the world that allow it to make sense, that enable us to make plans and assume the sun will rise the next day and all of that. So that all happens at that level, but it's all a construct.
Uh-huh. So we actually, science is actually getting there. I mean, yeah, the edge of forefront of science.
It is, but what they don't get, they still think it's random, it's a self-created object, the cosmos. They don't see and recognize the fact that there had to be a consciousness prior to the universe who, even if the Big Bang was real and it's a false concept, but even then, how did that point of light get there to explode into a cosmos? The scientists won't go there because they're not allowed to recognize the reality of God. That's not science. That's faith. That's religion, right? So that's the borderline, and it stops the development of science, and that's why they can't figure out the so-called hard problem of consciousness, because they think consciousness is produced by gray matter in the brain, and it has nothing to do with that. And they'll never be able to find out how that happens, because it doesn't happen that way.
Right. Well, I think scientists like Donald Hoffman and Bernardo Kastrup, they've kind of...
They're not accepted as scientists anymore. They would both be considered having strayed into philosophy and metaphysics.
Right.
I agree with you that I think they are onto it. But I would not call them really part of the mainstream scientific establishment.
No, they're on the forefront, right, where no man has gone before.
Yeah, there are scientists mm-hmm. who are awakening from that and who are extremely mystical in their orientation. There are some. But the general paradigm that is taught, if you want to get a PhD in physics or something, will not go there, okay?
Right.
In the same way that if you want to get an MD degree in medicine, you're not going to learn about psychosomatics. You know, right. You'd have to go to another kind of school altogether to see how the mind creates the symptoms in the body. They don't teach that.
Right. Do you have time? I just listened to an amazing talk with Bernardo and some quantum physics guys, but mm-hmm. maybe you don't have time.
Hmm?
Do you have time? Can I send you things?
You can send me.
Okay.
I've probably seen it already.
Oh,
you can send.
Because I'd love to hear. And they're also starting to talk about how creative our mind is, and that the possibility that there are other extraterrestrials and stuff like that.
I understand that they're doing that, but I think for a yogi, that's a diversion.
Yeah, I sort of thought that
too. It doesn't matter. Get to the absolute I. You're wasting your time watching videos about this.
Right.
Because, yes, they will eventually catch up. Eventually, all of this will become common knowledge at the end. That's part of the revelation. Mm-hmm. But you want to already be in God consciousness, not hear about it on YouTube. Okay?
I sort of thought that, but it is so
interesting. I hope that's the case.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
I'm trying to connect the dots between yesterday's teaching and today's teaching. And it struck my mind when you said that the direct path, if we want to get out of the what I call emptying the bucket with a teaspoon, as I said to Marjivama this afternoon, you know, the gradual path of purification. I've been in therapy since I was 14. I'm 58, so I'm kind of fed up with it. Mm-hmm. So, but you said if you want to go to the direct path, you need conceptual knowledge. But you also need knowledge of the real, in the real, as the real. So right. An imperience, a direct imperience,
yes,
that is beyond doubt, even momentary. I don't think I ever had it, that imperience. So what can we do to facilitate this? You said the blissful light of lights to facilitate that imperience.
love God with all your heart.
All your might, all your strength.
That's right, because it's that love that brings the unity. It will bring the grace, because love is what God is. And if you are emanating love for God, you will realize that that is also God's love for you. And that love will capture you and bring your consciousness up into unity with the real self.
Okay. Is this the eye of luminous clarity? Is it the same that imperience? Is it the imperience of the real, ourselves at the real? Is it the same as you mean with the third level, the eye of luminous clarity?
The eye of luminous clarity is the beginning of that. It is the awareness of the Supreme Presence. But it doesn't mean that one has already cut all the bondages at those other levels, but it gives you the freedom now to do that. Okay? So it is the opening into the Buddha nature, right? The Rigpa, as some of the Buddhists would call it in Tibet. It is that level in which all of this is suddenly very clear, and now the ascent can be completed. So it's like a base camp near the top of the mountain, but it's not the peak yet.
Okay. And then my last question, still connected to the same thing. Considering the constraint of time, because the end is drawing near, as I understood you, back to the singularity, would you consider taking psychedelics like psilocybin, for example, a useful help to
not
have
for
this
everyone. That's something that's a very, very individualized decision. There are some people that absolutely should not do it, and even those for whom it has some benefit, it will not bring liberation. And in fact, one can become addicted to that experience, which is still within consciousness. It's simply a consciousness freed of some of the constraints of the ordinary mode of perception. But for most people, it will bring sometimes a good trip, and sometimes a bad trip. So there has to be both the right orientation, the right ego structure, the right level of maturity to make use of something like that. But for most, it's completely unnecessary and somewhat dangerous. If there's a latent psychotic fragment in the subconscious that you don't know about that could be triggered, it can cause some very bad effects. So that needs to be really processed accurately with an adept shaman who really knows how to read the psyche of someone and their auric field, and to see that there are no spirit possessions and no other kinds of forces that could produce a very negative outcome. And there are very few people adeptly trained in that field anymore. So I would be very careful about it.
Is it a way that people use to get past the level four, the fear of losing sense? Because I feel a big fear of the unknown and a huge amount of control when I meditate. As soon as things kind of get out of control, that's why I was... took it, the person I was thinking of is this machine to do the experience.
I don't think that it would be accurate, but when we meet, we can talk about that, among other things. And I may have some other suggestions for you as to how to get past this.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you're very welcome.
I have a little curiosity of how the enlightened ones operate for the lower four. Are they integrated or sevens, or some is actually eliminated, or each enlightened ones, they do it differently, or other possibilities?
Well, it can be eliminated because the body can die the moment you reach God consciousness because there's no longer any attachment to it. But in the case of reaching, let's say, the eye of wisdom, right? It's a kind of liberation. It's the beginning of Jivan Mukti, but the body is still alive, but it's only now considered to be a machine that you use in order to transmit the wisdom and the adoration, the love, the joy, the truth of the real into the world. And then when that work has been done, then one will leave the body without any sense of there being any loss or gain, and there will no longer be any identification with that vehicle. Okay, so it becomes irrelevant, and whatever the will of God wants happens. You know, the Tao takes over. There's no longer any decision of what should I do with my body and live my life. You know, all those questions, one is beyond.
Yeah, this question, thank you. The question also associated with maybe some of the parts will be like for people to fake it, to make it, for when they know the enlightened ones, how they deal with the lower force, for sense of I, this driver. They're trying to eliminate the desire or...
Yes, the problem is they're doing it from within the ego, using the desire to not have desire. And it's often it doesn't work. You can't force these kinds of things. You have to be, to have risen above it for real. And that's why the complete knowledge of the truth is so necessary. Otherwise, one will be constantly trying to improve one's ego, uplift oneself. But that's not oneself. The self is already beyond the ego and doesn't require any effort whatsoever. It's only a letting go. And not trying to make the ego more virtuous. Its virtues will come as a byproduct of self-realization, not the other way around.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a few more minutes, if anyone else...
I would like to ask for a little clarity on sense and nonsense. It's a little nonsensical to me. And I'm sure you explained it very clearly in the teaching, but I didn't fully grasp it. Are you saying that the ego thinks it makes sense of the world? Mm-hmm. Until one rises, then things become nonsensical? Is that...
It's not that. It's just that the world itself is the product of a certain kind of logic that enables the arising of different events and aspects of the world. The fact that there is solid matter, liquid, gas, all of these aspects that we take for granted and we assume, that's what reality is. But when you get to higher levels of the eye, things happen. Magic happens. Miracles happen. Things happen that you can't make sense of from any ordinary paradigm. And it's that. It's the level that the horizon of the miraculous is now fully present. But to the ego, it's nonsense. How can that be? That's why we say God is inconceivable. Because that level of being can produce effects that are impossible, shape-shifting and bilocating and things that ordinarily people would not believe until they've had some of those experiences that transcend sense. like a near-death experience, for example, or other kinds of experiences and experiences that people have, that it may take years to make sense of afterward, right? So once you leave this plane of the phenomenal linear chronos time, then you're in eternity. You're beyond all laws of nature. You're in a frame of reference now that in which there's total freedom, and what is dreamt by that level of the eye can be actualized. It can manifest because everything is just thought. And at that level, the thought becomes a thing.
Thank you. That helps a lot. In the world of sense, what I think of is in that realm, it's very finite.
Yes.
And
exactly.
So when you can, there can't be sense in that infinite world, because when you think you have made sense of something, mm-hmm. that's saying it's defined it, but you can't define anything, and it exactly. has to be able to change at any moment.
That's right. That you've collapsed the quantum and qualium mm-hmm. wave field with that, this makes sense, this is mm-hmm. it, this is the world I want to live in, right? Mm-hmm. So there has to be that freedom in order to shift a Kali Yuga into a Sat Yuga, that miraculous dream that's impossible from any ordinary common sense mm-hmm. is something that will happen, but because of the power of the infinite intelligence to dream it.
I keep thinking about how does paradox play, it mm-hmm. seems to play perfectly into this.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that you had said towards the end of the teaching, which really stood out, was I think I understood it when you said, well, I think I understood what you said was creativity turns nonsense into beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that touched me a lot. That was very mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kalyan. Did you have a question?
Namaste.
So when you have tasted the ultimate wisdom, the almighty power, the divine love, and then you felt somehow back into the ego state, you know that you're just an illusion. You have no will at all. So what to do? Because you know, it's like I can do nothing at all because I do not really exist as the ego, as I'm just feeling myself. And at the same time, I know what I am. Mm-hmm. So what to do?
mm-hmm. Well, you see, I think you haven't reached the absolute self. You have reached the realization that you're not the ego. You're not the body or the mental apparatus,
yeah.
But there's still an I sense. There's still a sense of an individual I. When that is gone, when you have totally silenced the mind, there will be no program that asks such questions. Life will be lived spontaneously, intuitively, and from within, and without any doubts or questions about what to do.
Yeah,
it all is a flow.
Thank you. But there is that that sensing of the presence of that presence that I am,
yes.
Which now is not possible in that state. It's not even I know it, but it's not possible to sense it, to feel it, to you know,
to feel the absolute I.
Yeah,
of course it is.
So how?
Yeah. You just have to keep the mind flatlined in total stillness. And that's all that it is. You will be absorbed into the light of God and all is bliss. While the body is functioning and talking and whatever, it's irrelevant because you're not that body. And so it will operate. Mm-hmm. In accord with the directions of the light. That's the Tao that will give the body its instructions to move. But without any sense of an I thought identifying with the organism, because you are the universal I, not the I of the particular body.
So stillness is the way.
Total stillness.
Okay.
The zero point.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope that this these two satsangs have perhaps enabled a paradigm shift or an opening to the higher levels of your being, your I-ness, and a drive to want to know that power of the supreme consciousness that is dreaming all of us on this plane right now, and is the responsible agent of how the drama unfolds. And once you realize that you are that, then you have total freedom and creative power to manifest the world in that mode in which the perfection is perceived, and is perceived by every being who is recognized as a manifestation of the One Self. And there will be no more sense of differences. All are one. And this is the final unfoldment, we could say, of the realization of the Self, who always was, is, and shall be the dreamer of every world, and be in the world as every being who is dreamed. Namaste.
Namaste.